Welcome to Simple Living Works Podcast. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest, Hazel Henderson of Ethical Markets Media. After the conversation in this episode, I'll report on some new services we're offering. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. Ethical Markets is an independent media company promoting the emergence of a sustainable, green, more ethical, and just economy worldwide. With the motto, 40 years of foresight, insights, and integrity, Ethical Markets researches, assists, and reports on all the new organizations, civic, nonprofit, and for-profit, as well as individuals working for the transition to the new economies of the dawning information-rich solar age. Hazel Henderson is the founder of Ethical Markets Media and the creator and co-executive producer of its TV series. She is a world-renowned futurist, evolutionary economist, a worldwide syndicated columnist, consultant on sustainable development, and author of the Axiom and Nautilus award-winning book, Ethical Markets, Growing the Green Economy, and 8 other books. She co-edited the UN Policy and Financing Alternatives and Planetary Citizenship. Her editorials appear in 27 languages in 200 newspapers syndicated by Interpress Service, Rome, New York, and Washington, D.C., and her book reviews appear in Seeking Alpha, a London-based market e-letter. Her articles have appeared in over 250 journals, including in the U.S., Harvard Business Review, New York Times, Christian Science Monitor, and others internationally. Her books are translated into 8 languages, and she sits on the editorial boards, including the State of the Future Report and E, the Environmental Magazine, Resurgence, and Foresight and Futures. Since becoming a full-time media executive in 2004, Hazel has stepped down from many of her board memberships, and she remains on some others. The first version of her Country Futures Indicators, or CFI, an alternative to the gross national product, was co-created with Calvert Group, Incorporated, now renamed the Ethical Markets Quality of Life Indicators. She created the Green Transition Scoreboard, the Ethical Markets Initiative on Transforming Finance, and the Ethic Mark Award for advertising that uplifts the human spirit and society. In addition, she's been the Regents Lecturer at the University of California, Santa Barbara, held the Horace Albright Chair in Conservation at the University of California, Berkeley, and advised the U.S. Office of Technology Assessment, the National Academy of Engineering, and the National Science Foundation. She holds several honorary Doctor of Science degrees. She is an active member of the National Press Club in D.C., the World Future Society USA, a fellow of the World Future Society Federation, and a member of the Association of Evolutionary Economists. She's received many awards. Now, here's Hazel, recently recorded.
The only measurement of economy's strength and relevance that seems to matter in media and politics is whether it's growing. Please explain what growth actually means for people, planet, and other species.
Of course, yes. Well, this is, my dear friend and mentor, E.F. Schumacher, who wrote the book Small is Beautiful. He always used the example of how it was very natural for a human being to grow to somewhere between 6 and 7 feet tall. But if they kept on growing like that, it would become monstrous, and of course, they would die. And so it's the same thing with societies. You know, once you reach a certain level of complexity and maturity, then the system changes and levels off and grows in wisdom, maturity, all kinds of different ways. And so I wrote a paper with my friend, the physicist Richard Capra, which we presented to the British Parliament and to the European Union, called Qualitative Growth. And we were only pointing out this perfectly obvious thing, that it's not a matter of growth versus no growth. It's what is growing, what is dying, and what needs to be maintained. And this is the same three questions when you look at any species. And, you know, once we accept that we are simply one living species within the biosphere and connected to all the other living species, you know, it's kind of easy to reframe the whole thing. And it was very interesting because we presented this, Fritjof and I, in a televised program at the House of Lords in London. And the politicians loved it, and so did the ones at the European Union, because they were saying, oh, gosh, you know, it's so hard to get beyond this whole idea of growth. But, you know, now we can handle it. Because we can say, oh, I see. Well, you're saying that the solar age new economy can grow while the fossil fuel economy dies away. Well, yes. And that's where we are now. And we're working a lot with this new group, which is promoting the whole idea of the green transition with green bonds and all of the new green finance that's happening, like in China. And if you want to go to the website, it's the United Nations Inquiry on Design of Sustainable Financial Systems. And we've been working with them for the past 3 years. I've contributed a couple of papers for them. And you can go to UNEP Inquiry at, let's see, UN, yes, UNinquiry.org. And their latest paper just came out a couple of months ago. And it is a global paradigm shift, which nobody in the mainstream financial media is writing about. But we're reporting on it on an almost daily basis.
Well, in our work on One Earth Economics, that is, an economy that fits within the ecological abundance and limits that we have, we seek the input from economists who explore what conventional economics does not. For example, I recently interviewed Brian Cech with the Case, who studies the steady state economics.
We know them, yes.
Based on the work of Herman Daly.
Right.
So, consequently, your work on blind spots of conventional economics is of great interest to you. Tell us about some of your work in those areas.
Well, basically, it's transcended economics a long time ago. I'm very bored with economics, no longer bother to talk too much with economists. I mean, of course, Herman Daly is a giant, and so was his teacher, Nicholas Georgescu Roygen, who was a friend of mine, and I wrote a review of his book, The Economics... that he understood the laws of thermodynamics. See, most economists don't even subscribe to the laws of thermodynamics. They're so behind the times. So Earth system science is my discipline. And in a practical way, as I mentioned, I prefer to work with accountants. But what's really exciting now is not just that the paradigm is shifting toward the green solar age economy, which is our next stage of human development, but also there are so many practical applications, and that's why we have the Green Transition Scoreboard, which has been mapping and tracking all of the private investments in green sectors since 2007. And currently it stands at a cumulative $7.1 trillion with a T. And originally I decided to create this Green Transition Scoreboard because I could see all of the arguments going on at the UN climate summits. Particularly, we announced this in the one in Copenhagen, where we knew it was going to be a train wreck because of the way that the Kyoto Protocol had been set up as all about naming and blaming and shaming. you know, you were either a tier one country who was doing the polluting, or a tier two country was victimized by the polluters. And what nobody was talking about was that everybody was interested, really, even back then in 2009, in moving to a low carbon, clean, green, knowledge richer kind of economy. And so we thought putting out our first number that year was $1.2 trillion. And while the bureaucrats were there arguing about billions, we said, look, there's already over a trillion in the pipeline from investors like me, small investors, you know, who are taking risks and putting money in solar and renewable energy and energy efficiency and all this good stuff. And so we've been doing that ever since, and our next iteration of this will be coming out in April. We think we'll be over $8 trillion, but we're not quite sure yet, but watch this space until we actually release this, hopefully around Earth Day. But the other kind of thing which is very exciting now is that these new disruptive platforms, electronic platforms being created in Silicon Valley, are now really eating into the old legacy banking and financial models. The best example being in Kenya, where over 50% of the GDP in Kenya is done on cell phones. They don't use the banking system at all. They just completely bypass it. And so there are now these platforms where people who are immigrants wanting to send home money to their families in some other countries, they used to be charged like 8 and 10% to send these remittances over the old banking system. And now they can go on a platform and do it on their cell phone for practically nothing. And so these disruptive platforms, of which there are hundreds, are called fintech, in other words, financial technology. And I have a piece on our website on this, if any of your audience is interested, called Fintech, Good and Bad News for Sustainable Finance. And I'm talking about the good news is that what we're doing is recreating the old barter swapping systems at all levels of society, which existed before money. And now what we're doing is we're putting them all on these swapping and exchange platforms where it's like electronic barter. And I did a paper on this, which I remember being invited to give in Santiago, Chile, back in 2000 by the Inter-American Development Bank president. And he understood this, but he said, you know, you've got to come down and give a paper to these 6,000 bankers who are all totally obsessed with money. They can't think of any other kind of value. So I gave this paper, and its name, which is still on our website, was Information, the World's New Currency Isn't Scarce. And so I just rounded up all the evidence that I had back then. You know, there was electronic platforms then like eBay and Craigslist, you know, and sites like Wikipedia were happening, but also all of the local currencies where people learn, hey, humans, we can all create our own money, you know, like all of the local currencies. That are still operating in many, many cities and small towns around the world. And of course, the bankers at that conference just began walking out. You know, they must have thought I was a crazy woman.
Well, these are some wonderful positive examples, Hazel. I've read some of your other examples. For example, you talk about a living income, a minimum income for all. You talk
yes.
about co-ops. So what are some of the other bright spots you see for the evolution of economic models that are to scale with the capacities of our one and only planet?
Well, I'm pushing very hard on co-ops now, and as you probably know, 2012 was the United Nations Year of Cooperatives. And most people don't know that cooperatives around the world employ more people than all of the capitalist profit-making companies together, combined. So really, the cooperative enterprises are the mainstream. And I think it will continue to be that way as we move to blockchain-based companies, which are also cooperatives, but they're based on internet platforms. And we can go way beyond the even Silicon Valley, where you don't have to have, for example, an Uber or Airbnb, where the only people actually sharing or getting rich are the Silicon Valley executives. On a blockchain technology, you can do these kind of electronic barter platforms where people just make their own deals and it's all recorded on blockchain. And you don't need a central matchmaker. This is really what we can do with blockchains now. And then to take it to the other extreme, this is the first time that I've created a standard which I think can actually change consumer behavior. I've never attempted that before. And this is a new standard we created about a year and a half ago to help shut down a polluting, horrible global gem mining. As you know, the diamond cartel and all of this gem mining, hundreds of miners die in the bowels of the earth every year in these horrible mines, and they're tremendously polluting, and the prices are totally administered, prices all reinforced by advertising like De Beers, a diamond is forever, persuading young men that you're supposed to buy a diamond engagement ring for your loved one and all of that kind of, nonsense. And so what we promoted is our new standard, which is called Ethic Mark Gems. And if you go to ethicmarkgems.com, you can read all about it. And all of these groups that have been fighting this diamond cartel and the blood diamonds, there was a movie about this a few years ago. And now what is happening is that this industry is being superseded and disrupted by all of the gems now, which are created scientifically in laboratories all over the world and are indistinguishable from gems mined out of the earth. So I created this new standard, which we have, which certifies only gems not mined from Mother Earth. And in The Economist, this issue, actually, you'll see a big story there about how for the millennial generation, the whole idea of a diamond engagement ring is so passé. And so now they can have a shiny object to give to their loved one, which was made in a local laboratory, because they're all over the place, and it will cost a thousandth of the price of the cartel diamond promoted with all of this advertising. So that's our latest way of operating to try to shut down a polluting industry by promoting a disruptive, scientific new way of doing things. And so these gems are conflict-free, they're cruelty-free, they're environmentally friendly, and they support local businesses. What's not to like? And they're cheap.
You're doing so many fascinating things, Hazel. Tell us a little bit about Ethical Markets Exploratorium.
Oh, well, that we invite everybody. That's our free MOOC. You know, MOOCs now, there's hundreds and hundreds of MOOCs. All of the colleges are doing them. And that means massive open online course, where you can click on that ethicalmarketsexploratorium.com, and you meet me there, and I say, well, you know, I never went to college, but I just followed my own passionate concerns for my life, and what was I doing on this beautiful planet? And I created this site, and I'm just inviting everybody who is a lifelong learner or who wants to be a competent global citizen, that if they go around our site, it doesn't matter where they began, if they begin on our Global Citizens page or our Earth System Science page or our Reforming Global Finance page or whatever, that if they work around just to what, you know, given their own interests, they'll end up being a competent global citizen suited up to play for this current century we live in. And of course, it's free. The whole idea is that education must be free.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Bernie Sanders is right.
That's wonderful. Hazel, tell us a little about ethical biomimicry finance.
Oh, that is the most far-reaching. And we put this thing together, this set of principles. It's really like a turnkey knowledge system. And we put it together with my friend Janine Benyus and the Biomimicry Institute. Incidentally, for full disclosure, I'm an investment in her for-profit called B3.8, which operationalizes her life's principles with lots of big companies now, where she'll go in there with a team of her scientists and redesign their product or their process, or tell them which products they should not be producing anymore, and so on and so forth. And so we all met here with her scientists and our best financial people, and we did a week-long mind meld, and then I wrote all of this stuff up as the principles of ethical biomimicry finance. And we knew it wasn't ready for the market, but like all of our other standards, we have to actually trademark them so that we can license them. And the only way that you can get finance people to pay attention to anything is if they have to pay money for it. There's no point giving things away to financial people. You know, that they operate on the money scale of value. And so we knew that sooner or later there would be pension funds, like from labor unions, and their trustees would be calling up the asset manager and saying, hey, do we have any biomimicry compliant companies in our portfolio? And we knew that the asset management would be going, duh, what on earth do they mean? And so they can license the principles of ethical biomimicry finance, install it on their Bloomberg terminal or whatever, and pay us an annual license fee to get up to speed. But so far, we haven't got any takers. See, I knew that I would have to create these markets, and so you expect. You put together these standards, and you know that for a while, until you've created through media the resonance out there, that nobody's going to pay any attention. But that's why we're linked with NGOs all over the world and labor unions, and this is the way these things become operational.
Well, media literacy is very important to us. I noticed you have a program called Ethic Mark, advertising that uplifts the human spirit and society. Tell us about Ethic Mark.
Oh, that was the thing I created when I started Ethical Markets Media in 2004, because that was the whole purpose of starting Ethical Markets in the first place, is that I knew media was absolutely key. I mean, we all live in mediocrities. doesn't matter what form of government we live under, media always has the last word, and that's how we run our lives really through media. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to start this foundation, and I put the first money into it, which was a bequest from an aunt of mine in Britain who was the head nurse at the National Health Service. I knew she would be happy for me to do that. And so we have been building this now, and the idea is that we get nominations for advertising campaigns from all over the world. We're building this every year. We're now on our 12th annual award, will be coming up. And all of our previous awards have been announced at the big SRI conference, which is run every year in the Rockies area. It used to be called SRI in the Rockies, but now it's in its 20th anniversary. And if you go on ethicmark.org, you can see the 3-minute winning campaigns that have won our award, our 11th annual award last year, or the ones, all the previous ones. And very few of them have been from North America. Most of them have been from around the world, many from Brazil, Europe, India. For example, last year's awards, and they should be up there by now, that I introduced them last November, and they were from Egypt and from India. And then the year before that, the award winners were from Cambodia and Pakistan. And, you know, there's about 700 corporate executives and asset managers go to this conference every year. And some of them were in tears watching these campaigns because, see, I mean, advertising is really one of the main educational tools on the planet. And yet most of it is miseducation into consumerism and manipulating people through appealing to their amygdala and trying to bypass their forebrain. You know, come on down to Florida, don't worry about paying for it. And we know all of the tricks of advertisers and the manipulations done very scientifically these days, you know, using MRIs and misusing science in many ways to make deep psychological incursions into people's buying habits. And so basically, we've now proved the concept. We have 6 co-sponsoring organizations, very well-known global organizations, which I recruited and gave them a kind of a free pass. But from now on, if any organization wants to co-sponsor the Ethic Mark Awards for advertising, they're going to have to pay a fee. Because now is the time when we can be paid back for all of this effort, which was all a volunteer effort up until this point. But this is how new markets get created. Somebody has to actually do it, you know?
Well, when you say, Hazel, watch this spot or watch this space, you're not kidding, because the ethicalmarkets.com site is just so packed with beautifully produced information. For example, book reviews. You wrote recently some book reviews on brain science and what have you. So this is my little encouragement for folks to visit ethicalmarkets.com and to watch some of the videos and read some of the blogs.
So. Oh, thank you, Gerald.
So thank you very much for your time. It has just been a real pleasure for me to get reacquainted with you personally.
Well, it's wonderful to catch up with you, and I look forward when you send me your emails and we post them whenever we can.
Be well, my friend.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
You've been listening to my conversation with Hazel Henderson of Ethical Markets Media. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com or on our Facebook page or the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes and at our website, simplelivingworks.org, click in window number 3. Also, it really helps our visibility when you give Simple Living Works a 5-star review on iTunes. My colleague Lee Van Ham's new book has been released. Lee's the executive director of Jubilee Economics. Entitled From Egos to Eden, Our Heroic Journey to Keep Earth Livable, it's volume 2 of Lee's trilogy called Eden for the 21st Century. I've read an advanced copy, reviewed it, and highly recommend it. Lee and I talked about volume 1, called Blinded by Progress, and volume 2 on podcasts. The links to those episodes are given in the show notes. We've started a new service in 2017 called Simpler Living Sanity Suggestions. Amid all the changes in our country, we offer a new suggestion each week, not as a placebo, but as encouragement to do something for yourself, your family, your community that may counteract any negative stuff that may be coming or happening now. The suggestions are given in the weekly nudge. The weekly nudge and the weekly digest together make up the Simple Living Works blog. Also, a link to all the sanity suggestions is given in the show notes. I started a little campaign recently as a response to regressive policies in D.C. and many of the states called I Buy Blue, How About You? Click the link in the show notes or subscribe to the Simple Living Works blog and simply send us an email headed Subscribe Blog. Then confirm your subscription when his confirmation email arrives. I blogged recently that we were changing our long-standing alternate celebrations to non-conform freely celebrations because the terms alternate and alternative had been compromised by the new buzzwords alternative facts in D.C. So I've started a short series called, appropriately enough, Banishing Fake News. You can also read each little installment in the Simple Living Works blog or read most of it on the Simple Living Works site. See the link in the show notes. I hope these new short features add positively to the national conversation about social change and support the voluntary simplicity movement. After reading them, your comments are welcome. Need a nudge? I've been producing today's Simpler Living Nudge for almost a year now and welcome you to subscribe for free. Receive it by email or Twitter. Just send me an email with the subject nudge at simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. I've received a lot of interesting responses, which you can read on the simplelivingworks.org site. Click on Recent Comments in window number 5, or see the link in the show notes. We've simplified our blogs for this year. The weekly nudge focuses only on the efforts of Simple Living Works. The weekly digest includes the latest posts from colleague organizations. Both come with a free subscription to the Simple Living Works blog. The more complete, almost obsessively detailed monthly digest is now updated at least once a week and kept on the Simple Living Works site. Links to the monthly digest are given in both the weekly nudge and the weekly digest. We hope you'll check it out, but we don't want you to be overwhelmed by the amount of help available toward a life of voluntary simplicity, which young adults now are inclined to call minimalism. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works podcast. If you're new to Simple Living Works and would like more basic information, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. If you haven't already subscribed, we hope you will through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember, you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview, Backup, and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscriptions to this podcast and to our weekly blogs are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe in iTunes to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, which I produce and co-host with Jubilee One Earth Economics. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on the show. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive way of life. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everybody's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. It's a balance of personal responsibility and advocacy for just public policy. It's more than personal happiness, though that's quite important. Contemporary faith-based simple living is based on the five life standards of living more with less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed those standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The three parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video. Links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Simply live, learn to live simply so others can live.